red tape or a local voice? And why do voters have to be the ones to decide this? I'm Steve Heimel. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. If you have questions about Ballot Measure 2, all 11 pages of it, you're in the right place. Our statewide phone number, 1-800-478-8255-478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@alaskapublic.org. Alaska is not in compliance with the Coastal Zone Management Act, 1972. What's that mean? That's the subject on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Kinnick Arm Bridge will create 1,500 jobs during the 4 years of construction and spur thousands more after completion by creating access to affordable land for commercial, industrial, and residential use. For facts on the Kinnick Arm Bridge, visit KinnickArmBridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
So you get your voter pamphlet from the State Division of Elections, and you realize that almost the entire pamphlet is devoted to Ballot Measure 2. There's endless pages about how much it costs, for instance. And then there's exhaustive analysis into multiple pages of all sorts. And there's kind of a, even the pro and anti statements are a bit on the long side. Well, yeah, it's confusing. It's definitely confusing. The issue is confusing. The history is confusing. And we're going to try and get it a little bit more straightened out and try and find out what does it all really mean and what does it mean to Alaskans? Because it could mean a lot, I think. And so to do that, we've got people from both sides of this intense campaign that's been going on. We have Representative Beth Kutula, House Minority Leader and co-chair of the Alaska Sea Party. Beth, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Welcome. And actually, I'm not a co-chair, but thanks. It's
okay.
Teresa Poe and Bruce Botello. But yep, I've been helping. Thank you.
Okay. Well, and but you certainly know the legislative history of how we got to where we are, and also you were involved as our the guests on the other side have been involved with Coastal Zone Management with hands-on.
Yes, I have.
Since back some time ago.
Back in the day, yeah.
Back in
right.
the day. And also with us, and I believe you are co-chair of No On Two, Kurt Fredrickson joins us from Juneau by telephone. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Kurt.
Thanks, Steve, and nice to be with you again, Beth.
Mm-hmm. You too.
Yeah, I guess you guys probably have had joint appearances before.
We are old friends and have known each other forever. It's always ironic in Alaska. These things are the way it, you know, happens here.
It is indeed. And we have a third guest on the program from down in Austin, Texas. Sherry Land is Director of Grant Programs and Support for the Coastal Resources Division of the Texas General Land Office. Sherry, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you, and thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of this program.
Yeah, I'm going to start with you, Sherry, because, you know, Texas has had coastal management for a while now, and you kind of are very much involved with the administration of it, and from your point of view, is it red tape or isn't it?
Well, you know, I think with any federal funding that you're going to get or federally approved program, there's going to be red tape involved. But I do think, you know, working closely with NOAA, who funds and approves the coastal program, is worth it in the long run. It has been for Texas. You know, I think it's allowed us to receive additional federal funding. It's opening the door for us. Especially now, and we've had an approved program since 1997 and are, I think, just now starting to see some of the benefits of having a program and maybe even the credibility that it gives us to look at future planning, such as coastal and marine spatial planning that we're starting to work on and working with the Gulf of Mexico states. So, yeah, there's red tape, but I, at this point, feel like it's worth the red tape.
Well, there's oil and gas activity, but it's mostly off the Louisiana coast, right?
That's correct. We're still responsible for consistency review in the Gulf of Mexico, along with the other states, and so we do. We are involved in some of that review, and then you know, whenever there's maybe some oil spills, like we just of course had, not as big as y'all's, but close. There's impacts to habitat, human uses, all in all of the Gulf of Mexico states.
You know, I used to live in Houston and go down to Galveston, and I understand since the hurricane hit, which is not the first hurricane that's hit Galveston, that it was just completely devastated, that there was so much development that was so close to the coast that essentially a lot of those properties just got wiped out.
Yeah, it was actually very, very bad. They're saying approximately $30-something billion in damages, and of course, Bolivar Peninsula, which is right above Galveston, was almost totally wiped out. And we're still working on, and will be for years, working on the recovery for that. But that right there just again shows the need to have some sort of a coastal management program in place, and the need to develop a planning mechanism for what happens, when these hurricanes hit. I mean, people, I don't think, you think about hurricanes, you talk about hurricanes, you see other people going through it, but until it happens in your own backyard, you really don't think about it. And I think that we're even, Texas was to a point where Texas thinks it's a state with a coast and not a coastal state. And so we're in the process of really trying to put some education out there. We're such a big, diverse state that we had some meetings after Hurricane Ike in Houston, and people didn't really understand what the importance of barrier islands, for instance, are in protecting the infrastructure all the way into Houston. So it's real important.
Yeah, and now marine spatial planning, I mean, this is... As you might imagine, just starting to be talked about in Alaska, and it terrifies the fishermen a great deal. But I would think that part of the coastal zone management process would be to involve those very fishing interests in how you're going to deal with this sort of issue.
Absolutely. And we're just in the beginning stages. Louisiana had kind of put together a master plan that they were working on, but we feel that one is needed for Texas, and hopefully the other Gulf states will follow through. But we have to start at the ground level, and we're looking at putting together committees of interest groups, and you've got industry, you've got recreational fishermen, you've got commercial fishermen, you've got just the fisheries interest in general, and all sorts of other, birding is huge in Texas. So the Audubons are going to need to be a part. I mean, it's a huge, huge effort. It's going to take years and years, but the importance of it and making sure that all of the industries have either buy-in or their concerns are addressed is going to be really, really important. It's time. You know, we were talking to a group of oil and gas industries looking at the fact that, you know, even they're trying to, of course, do the development that they need to do offshore, for instance. And we're trying to protect the environmental resources offshore. And we really haven't done a good job in working with each other up front. So we wait until, for instance, if a permit is required by the Corps of Engineers, we wait until that point to talk about what issues or environmental concerns there may be that the other federal or state resource agencies may have. By putting together a plan, you can up front have kind of a mapped out area and say, ooh, gee, if I put, for instance, a platform out here, I'm going to impact, you know, there could be pipelines out there. It could be a navigational waterway. And so maybe I should move my project over, you know, however many yards or miles or whatever the instance may be. But doing that up front is going to help everybody in the long run. And we've had that with even sand sources offshore, you know, wanting to protect the sand source, yet people are, you know, wanting to put, there's been a talk about putting a wind turbine out offshore. So, you know, we need to move that and make sure that everything's protected and everybody's happy. So that's what our goal is.
And do you have, Alaska has been through basically two iterations of this. In the first iteration, they set up districts and they they had each district then kind of had a board, and then they reviewed all these projects and so forth. They developed their plans, and the plans got approved and like that. Then it went to a system where there was a statewide coastal policy council. The idea was to streamline and simplify. What do you have in Texas?
Right now we have a coastal coordination advisory committee. It's basically the state natural resource agency designees and then four gubernatorial appointees, and they are all located along the gubernatorial appointees are located along the Texas coast, but we're trying to cover the best interests of all of the coastal issues. So the group gets together, talk about, we give out grants to local communities, and we talk about grants, and then they're also called together for any consistency issues that we may have on a project. And then we work with a smaller working group of this committee on other issues, permitting issues, the coastal and marine spatial planning, any sort of kind of working group meetings that we might need.
All right, Sherry Land of the General Land Office of the State of Texas. And Sherry, we're going to kind of put you on the back burner now and have you available if people call and they want to get more information about the Texas program and make comparisons and so forth. And thanks so much for being with us on the show.
Wonderful. Happy to be here.
All right. Now, I think I'll go next to Kurt Fredrickson. And, you know, because of your long involvement with this, including having been the actual commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation, you're acquainted with the whole history of this, as is Beth Kurtula. And I think we all know that the campaign has been intense. And, Kurt, you're on the no-on-to side of this. And I'm wondering why, if you have watched this whole process and been involved in it, there must be something wrong with what was drafted here, ballot measure 2, all 12 pages or whatever it is.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, I believe there is something wrong, and let me just kind of make sure I get the message out that I am not opposed to coastal management. In fact, I think Sherry did a really excellent job just describing some of the benefits that I think we have enjoyed in the past here in Alaska with our previous coastal management program. And I know in the future I'll be working with folks like Beth Kurtula, regardless of the outcome of this particular initiative, to see that we recapture those. And let me just kind of quickly state what I see those are. Coastal management at its fundamental level, I believe, is a commitment at the federal, state, and local level to consult and coordinate before making resource development and protection decisions. And I think that those core principles I have no problems with, I support, and I want to see a coastal management program that takes those forward. Unfortunately, I have read ballot measure number 2 a number of different times and compared it against the old coastal management laws, and the two just are not the same. The ballot measure 2 just will not restore the coastal management program that I worked under, where we had a coastal policy council that consisted of elected officials that had very explicit requirements for local input on state decision making, and that had provisions for permit coordination and predictable timeframes for making decisions. So I support coastal management. I support coastal management in the form that the House passed 40-0 in a bill not too long ago that almost made it through the legislature. And I want to go back to that, but ballot measure 2 is not restoring the coastal management program. It is coastal management in name only.
Okay. With that, I think we'll go to you, Beth Kurtula, because Kurt pointed out it was a 40-0 vote. I mean, so that means the minority voted for it, too.
Yes, the minority was asked specifically to vote for it so that we could quickly move it to the Senate. I stood up on the floor and noted that there were still some issues with the bill, and just as almost every other bill in the legislature has happened, the Senate made some very necessary changes, and we went to a conference committee. But, you know, that really, you know, the legislative history is interesting, and we in Alaska love to talk politics, but really What's at stake here, in my opinion, as a legislator of 14 years and House Minority Leader now for 6 years, is that if we don't take action now, I don't see the legislature coming in and doing anything for quite some period of time, for a number of reasons, but mostly because the legislature will say the people have spoken and that they have rejected this program. And I see this as our chance to come back and have Alaska join every other coastal state. I mean, the large irony of Alaska being the largest coastal state not having a program is just really huge. So this is our chance. And this program isn't just like the very old program. We made some very necessary changes in the initiative so that this program can be an incredibly strong program for the state, with our voice against the federal government, with communities, so that they have direct involvement, not a veto, but direct involvement in what happens, and with development, as I thought Sherry just really did a great job of pointing out, one of the beauties of coastal zone management is that, you know, if you wait until development is far enough down the road, everybody has a problem being involved, and you wind up in lawsuits and problems. But if you get everybody together up front, which is what coastal management does, everyone can sit down and hammer out the problems. And that's the kind of program that the initiative foresees, is having a program that helps development, helps communities, and obviously helps the state with the federal government.
So you're basically giving a little ground in that. Of course, there could easily be delays if things have to go through this this extra layer, right?
Well, actually, it should work quickly. We've left to the regulations the timelines, and we did that specifically because, you know, with 11 pages, you don't really want to write in, you know, another 100 pages of regulation on how exactly that's going to take place.
Right. Now, realistically, Beth.
Go ahead. Uh-huh.
Realistically, the legislature, basically this, any initiative only is in effect for 2 years, and then it's gone
right.
again. And so right. So basically,
well, no, it's in effect unless we pass legislation against it, but we can change it.
Right. This is my point. I've looked at all these Supreme Court decisions, and the fact of the matter is that the Supreme Court likes to weigh in favor of the voters in terms of the initiative process, but it also is quite liberal with the legislature in terms of what it judges substantially similar. In other words, what this would essentially do is not write a law, but give a law to the legislature and say, okay, take your shot at this and fix this.
That's right.
Yeah. Kurt Fredrickson, don't you see it that way too? I mean, doesn't this just simply say, okay, well, here's our shot at it. Now let's let the legislature fix it. And don't you think that whatever the legislature did come up with would probably pass muster with the Supreme Court as being substantially similar?
Well, there's a certain the logic of this somewhat escapes me when, on the one hand, we're saying we need to move this initiative forward because we can't rely on the legislature, but then we have to rely on the legislature to fix it. I don't support passing a law that we know to be flawed and that needs to be fixed. I support a bill, a law, that includes the very important things that Beth has just spoken to as she hopes to be included. But hope and intent is not what we're voting on. We're voting on state statute, and I don't believe the legislature would touch a citizen's initiative for at least 2 years. I don't have the confidence in, I don't believe we should be passing a law that we know is broken with the expectation that it hopefully will be fixed. I want to see a coastal management law that I don't think will take hundreds of pages to write, as Beth suspects, because I've operated under it. I've seen the previous coastal management law, and it wasn't tens of pages, it was just a few extra lines. It said things like, when state agencies are issuing permits, they must reach out and ask for the comments of coastal districts. It has a one line that says coastal consistency determinations will be made within 90 days. These aren't pages and pages of requirements. These are very straightforward requirements that I believe the law should include, and the law used to include, but now it's been removed in the initiative.
I think, Beth, I'll let you handle that for a moment, but please don't get too long on this.
I'll try not to, because I think these are really small details. The overall picture is what's much more important here, that we have a program, that we have our voice against the federal government. In fact, Paul Seaton just found that if we don't have a program like this, we don't have a voice against fish farming in federal waters.
All right. That was exactly the next point I was going to bring up. And I'm going to throw that one to you, Kurt Fredrickson, that hasn't Alaska in de facto, as time goes on, kind of like happened with subsistence, is gradually going to lose jurisdiction to the federal government?
No, I don't believe so. I think there are a number of federal laws out there, like the OCS Lands Act, like NEPA, that require consultation between the federal government and state and local governments. That's not to say the Federal Coast Zone Management Act is not worthwhile pursuing, but it is not the only game in town. With respect to the offshore fishing, and I think this one's a little bit deceptive, because there was a release from Paul Seaton on behalf of the Sea Party that said we got to worry about offshore fish farming in federal waters based on this federal law that's in existence. Well, they've now issued a retraction of that. The federal law there is a bill that was in Congress for consideration back in 2011. It's not seen any action. And so there is no federal law governing offshore fish farming. And in fact, throughout the country, there are no commercial fin fish farming operations in federal waters. They're all in state waters. And in Alaska, we've prohibited it. So I think this is a bit of a red herring when we bring up a hypothetical that really doesn't even match the reality of what's in federal law. And I have a lot of confidence in both in our congressional delegation to make sure that any federal law that might come about for fin fish farming has Alaska's interests protected.
Well, you can bet that they would try, but maybe I can throw over to Sherry Land. Is this fish farming, as I understand it, there are interests down there in the Gulf of Mexico that are very much interested in pen-raising fish.
Yeah, you know, I think we had a spurt, especially probably not as much fin fish, I guess, as shrimp, the shrimping industry and shrimp farms. And, you know, we're not too involved with that. There's not a lot of regulation, I guess, when it comes with that. We work with our Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, our Parks and Wildlife Department, and our Department of Agriculture on the regulations for fish farming. But really, as far as, you know, in state waters along the Texas coast, there's not a lot.
Okay, yeah. And Beth Cotulla, you apparently Sea Party has backed off a little bit from what Paul Seaton said.
Yeah, let me explain this. NOAA, the agency that works with Coastal Zone, has had a longstanding policy about fish farming that says that without a Coastal Zone program, the state really can't touch it because it's in federal waters. It's way offshore. Now, the problem for Alaska, as we're real aware, is that that might be, you know, it may be way offshore, but it's going to come inland and wreak havoc with us, which is why we've been so strong in state waters. But that's the thing. We wouldn't even need a policy, frankly, to even have that be the issue. But now there's also this bill pending that would make it even clearer what the problem is. And as you've said, we know this specter, and we would fight it. But it's so simple to fight it if we have a coastal zone program, because whether it's fish farming, whether it's outer continental shelf regulation, we have more federal waters, more federal lands in Alaska than any other state. It is paramount for us to have this important tool to deal with the federal government. This is our strongest way to deal with it. And in Alaska, it's unbelievable that we would give up this tool.
Well, how did, you know, you were involved, weren't you an attorney for the coastal program before you ran for the legislature?
Yeah, in the day.
and how did it work? I mean, because I was acquainted with a couple of these districts, and it seemed to me that really Alaska is so sparsely populated that word does get around. I mean, you just take it to these, it's almost an informal process where they meet and they go over the projects. And then everybody knows about them, and that's over. I can remember one time when North Slope decided to make an issue of the Camden Bay offshore well, estate lease sale right off the shore from Anwar. And the district decided it was not consistent with their coastal zone management plan, and that went all the way to Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, so what? And they drilled Camden Bay.
Right, and I can't remember if that's the example or if it's a different one where the problem was the state didn't have an enforceable policy in place.
Mm.
So you've got to have something to put your teeth into. You've got to have the hook. But once you have that hook, it's extremely powerful. Now, Commissioner Hartig, after Kurt was commissioner, Commissioner Larry Hartig testified in our conference committee during the legislation. And I don't want to mislead anyone. I have not talked to him about this initiative, and I don't want to mislead on that. But what he said about coastal management was this. The reason he wanted it was because our oil spill contingency plans are more restrictive, more powerful than the federal contingency plans. And he wanted that tool against the federal government to impose our plans. And I wanted to thank Sherry for bringing up, we in Alaska certainly, unfortunately, have a lot of experience in oil spill. We want to be able to have our say on what happens in those federal waters.
We do have a stack of calls already coming in here, but Kurt Fredrickson, I wanted you to give you a chance to respond to that about this primacy, the state having tighter regulations and maybe not being able to have the reach that it needed if it's not in the federal program.
Well, I think as a practical matter, using the oil spill as an example, I think my experience has been that the federal agencies do pay a lot of deference to the state, even though it may not have direct jurisdiction. I think the Federal Coast Zone Management Act does provide federal consistency, which is a good thing. Just like the OCS Lands Act provides for recommendations from the governor have to be considered, that's a good thing. So any federal law that provides Alaska a louder voice in federal decision-making is a good thing. I'm not against coastal management. I am against ballot measure 2 because I don't think it'll get us there. And I do think Beth overemphasizes the power of consistency. I reviewed projects for a number of years, issued consistency determinations, and I have many examples where the state, in conjunction with the North Slope, up on North Slope Oil and Gas, took positions and found projects both consistent and inconsistent with the coastal management program, and the federal government took an office at view and issued or denied permits accordingly. So it's not a veto, it's not an overrule, but anything that gives us influence is beneficial. I think we need a state program that builds on that capability.
Let's go to Alistair, joins program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Well, thank you, Steve. This is really an interesting discussion. And the reason I'm calling is I guess you'd call me an Alaskan patriot. And my concern is that Alaska and Alaskan patriots are facing two large external forces, not just the federal government, but multinational corporations that want to have their way with Alaska. And part of what concerns me, Kurt, can you hear me?
I can, thank you.
Yeah. Kurt, I got a real problem with you personally as a spokesman in the interests of Alaska. When you were in the state of Alaska and you had the authority to enforce regulations, you didn't. you watered down those regulations and that enforcement, and that led to a big mess up on the slope. So I have a hard time sitting here listening to you talk about the perfectibility of regulations and laws when you didn't enforce them when you had that job. And I want to know how you can sit there with a straight face and pretend to be fair and balanced about this.
Oh, I have no problems feeling very proud of my service to the state of Alaska, and I was very aggressive in enforcing the environmental laws of the state while working my 30-year career. So I have nothing to be ashamed of in terms of the strong enforcement actions I took across the state, including, and I think you might be referring to the corrosion spill with BP a number of years back.
I'm referring to your claimed lack of awareness of BP's leak detection system when it turned out that you, in fact, were aware of the deficiencies and didn't do anything about it.
Well, I get
it. One of the reasons why Sarah Palin replaced you when she came into office. And you're sitting here talking about the best interests of the state of Alaska? I'm sorry, Kurt.
That's fair. You're entitled to your opinion. I know the laws that we had on the books at the time.
Okay, well, let's let him explain there, Alistair.
The letter of the law.
Yeah. Okay, so just to clear this up, Kurt, what was your response to you knew the leak detection system didn't work?
The laws that were in place then were essentially federal and state laws, and the federal laws were the laws that were in place for that particular issue. The other issues with that pipeline that fell under state jurisdiction, we enforced to the letter of the law, and with the Department of Law, I believe some of those cases are still ongoing.
All right. Yeah. And thanks for your call, Alistair. That was a lot of fun. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to URN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from the Federal Aviation Administration, providing information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. FAA.gov/go/FlyAlaska or toll free at 1-866-357-4704. Fall semester is just around the corner. Alaska Pacific University offers 2-year, 4-year, master and doctorate level programs committed to student-centered experiential learning. And there's no application deadline. Online education options are available in all undergraduate programs. For more information on how to obtain a quality and affordable education, visit alaskapacific.edu or call 564-8248. This message is sponsored by APU.
Our subject is ballot measure 2, and for it, we've got Bhaskar Tuli of the Sea Party. Against it, we've got Kurt Fredrickson, former DEC commissioner and co-chair of No On 2, and also with us from the great state of Texas, Sherry Land, director of grant programs at the Coastal Resources Division at Texas General Land Office. And the calls are coming in now. We got to decide on this one, people. We got to decide on this one next Tuesday. We only got a week to figure this one out. Roger in White Mountain, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Good morning. What happened in the Gulf can happen in Alaska big time. Alaska being the northernmost state in America and having 40% of America's coastline, wouldn't Alaska need laws tailored to our unique situation like size, climate, et cetera? I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we'll go first to Kurt, I think, on that one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think we need strong environmental laws. I think all Alaskans believe in responsible development, but responsible development depends on having responsible environmental laws. I think Alaska has some of the strongest environmental laws in the country. As Representative Kurtula pointed out, I think our oil spill contingency planning requirements and prevention requirements are the nation's best. So I agree with the caller. I think we need to have those laws in place, and we do. And this with or without coastal management, the state of Alaska will have those laws in place.
And Beth Kurtula.
You know, one of the other unique things about the Coastal Zone Program is it is the most community-oriented. It brings in coastal districts so that local people actually have a seat at the table to be able to lay out what the issues in their communities are. And that's incredibly powerful. It's incredibly important for development because, just as Sherry Landis was saying from Texas, if you're there at the beginning, you can literally say, you know, you're about ready to put that pipeline right through an eelgrass bed that's the habitat for the fish. So if you move it over 20 feet, if you move it over 100 feet, everything's going to work just fine. And it's that kind of communication. I think Governor Knowles the other day said communication instead of confrontation. And it's that's the way forward for development in Alaska, is let's make it work. You know, let's figure these issues out together and make it work. And that's one of the very unique things about Coastal Zone. It has that direct community involvement. It's not a veto. It's a way to go forward. So I think, yes, we need to have unique laws. We are a unique place. We need to have our unique local knowledge involved, and coastal management does that extremely well. It brings in people so that your voice can be heard, and it makes development work, because then you're not setting yourself up for a lawsuit later on. It's just one of those very good programs that involves people up front so that you can have strong development.
Yeah. Well, wait, now we're all finding ourselves agreeing with one another.
But,
well, there you go. Steve, so you know, on too.
No,
Steve, I would have to agree wholeheartedly with what Beth just said, and she just described the previous coastal management law. It was spelled out in that law. It is not in ballot measure 2. That's one of the details that Beth feels, you know, I'm kind of too concerned about, and she's hoping that this appointed board will include those in regulations, and I just don't have that level of confidence.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, just to go back, the legislative history is one thing, but we did what you're referring to there with the local involvement, where the elder can just simply point out, oh, you know, the eelgrass is right here, and that's where you want to put the pipeline. If you just move it over there, you'll be fine. And mm-hmm. the elders are very good at that sort of thing, I have discovered.
They are. Yes, they are.
That was kind of the very thing that really got pushed in, either off the stove entirely or at least way on the back burner, when Jim Clark came in and rewrote the damn thing.
When Governor Murkowski came in, he really tried to gut the program, and he did a pretty good job of it. We heard a lot from the districts about how unhappy they were with the program when it was in DNR. I'm not saying it's DNR's fault per se, but the program as it was written was not working for the districts.
Right, the House passed a bill which essentially pretty much restored or kept in place that system, the Jim Clark system. And then the Senate said, no, you're going to have a local voice. And even in a special session, isn't that what basically held the whole thing up?
There was a very big meltdown on it. It was very unfortunate because it got into a meltdown about local knowledge versus scientific evidence. In my view, and the scientists that work on the North Slope, the people that are leading this state forward, talk about the fact that it never should be pitted against each other. It should be used together, which is how the initiative is written, which is how the previous regulations for the program had always been written. So, yes, you're right. That was a very big problem.
To start talking about the scientific evidence and all that, then we're getting
a little afield. I just want to explain how bad it was in the legislature and why I don't believe the legislature will be able to do this, particularly if we don't pass the initiative. I also need to say just one thing. The objectives of this initiative absolutely require there to be coastal districts, there to be a program that works with the coastal districts, and that the involvement is direct. They do not have a veto, but they have direct involvement in the program, and that's going back to the older program and that outline.
Right, and hopefully that'll help answer Roger's question. Tom in Anchorage, welcome to Talk of Alaska on Ballot Measure 2.
Thank you. I worked in the Coastal Management Program for 8 years, 3 years when it was in the governor's office, before the Murkowski administration, and then 5 years when it was in DNR during the Murkowski, Palin, and Parnell administrations. And my last 4 years or so, I ran the entire consistency review division, which I, or unit, which I would contend is the heart of the program. Reviews of proposed projects in the coastal zone for consistency with the state's coastal management plan.
Right.
And I thought the benefit, even once it was emasculated, the program was emasculated by the Murkowski administration, there was nevertheless a benefit for developers, for people proposing projects. And it reminded me of when I lived on the Kenai Peninsula, and I had I lived on the shores of a little lake, and I built a sauna down there. And one of my sauna guests said, "Hey, did you get a permit from the Corps of Engineers for this?" And I said, "What?" He said, "From the Army Corps of Engineers." And I said, "Well, what possible interest could the Army have in my sauna?" You know, I had no inkling at that time that I didn't understand the permitting system, and I would posit that most mom and pops.
Whoops, we lost somebody. I don't know who.
Okay.
Okay, we got you.
Okay. Well, most small time proponents of coastal projects don't know the permitting system, or they don't know the true complexities of the permitting system. And the permitting systems are very complex because there's state permits required and then there's federal permits required. And the laws setting up these permit requirements, you know, they don't necessarily jibe with one another. In fact, they typically don't. Timelines, requirements. So where we were helpful, and I actually thought it was a lot of fun helping proponents, was like, well, you know, you're going to have trouble if you try to do this. Have you checked this? We were their guides through the system, and that's through the permitting maze. And that's actually the aspect of the coastal management program that DNR has spent a little effort in the last year trying to recreate for the benefit of the smaller proponents of projects in the coastal zone. The big proponents, the oil companies, the mines, they can hire consultants, and they do.
Mm-hmm. So basically, how are you going to vote on it?
Oh, I'm going to vote for it. I think there are flaws in it, in the initiative, but I agree with Representative Curtula that if the voters don't put this in effect now to be tweaked inevitably as the Clean Water Initiative has been tweaked by the legislature, then we won't have one, because clearly the current administration and the House and the Senate, as it will be constituted following this election, aren't going to be interested in doing it.
Hmm. So we go back to Kurt Fredrickson. I think we've lost our connection with Beth Curtula, Kurt, so you actually get the floor here.
Well, that's hopefully she'll rejoin us.
Yes.
You know, Tom, I appreciate your comments, and I could not agree with you more. I think the consistency, review, and coordination benefits were many, and I think they also fell very much to the small operator, the individual homeowner. I hear you also saying you want to vote yes, and I will just try and persuade you to vote no by directing you, read the initiative and read how they describe their consistency review procedures, and then compare that to the law. And don't go back to the Hammond law, or the Murkowski law, if people think that was so abhorrent. Go back to the law that existed in 2002 and look at how the consistency review procedures were written in law there. I think the differences are stark. I think they are very much different than the old way of doing consistency reviews. And if the proponents of ballot measure 2 overlook that, they dismiss that by saying, don't worry about it, it's going to be fixed. It's going to be fixed by this appointed board, or it's going to be fixed by the legislature, or it's going to be fixed in the future to get just what you want. And that's where I have my real heartburn. they see everything that isn't written coming out the way they want it. I see things coming out with less certainty and probably a much uglier outcome. So I agree.
Oops.
I had a lot of benefits. Ballot Measure 2, just as written, doesn't have them.
So you're not agreeing with Tom, then, that he has no confidence in the legislature. I mean, I guess his point and Beth's point both is that if the voters don't, like, slap the legislature's hand and say, hey, pay attention, you got to do this, you got to deal with this in the form of Ballot Measure 2, that they won't deal with it.
No, I think they will. We had that bill, HB 106, where you had the House 40-0. You know, what? When all is said and done, what wound up defeating coastal management was one or two votes in the legislature. I think this Ballot Measure 2 debate, the one we're having this very moment, there are some common themes, and I've been around the state talking about this for a number of months now. The common theme of intergovernmental coordination and consultation, local involvement in state decisions, predictable and coordinated permitting. These are themes that are resonating with everybody. That's what we need to capture. I think HB 106 did a good job and was a fair compromise at achieving that. It spelled out the local role, which is not spelled out in Ballot Measure 2. It created a council which, like the Texas General Land Office, was advisory to an agency with expertise in permitting and resource management, unlike Ballot Measure 2, which makes this board a regulatory board and puts the permitting expertise in a Department of Commerce and Community Economic Development that has no expertise in permitting. There's just a lot of things in Ballot Measure 2 that just are nothing like the old program, and I'm just very fearful that it's going to set us back and not move us forward.
I think Beth Kertula is finally.
I got back.
Oh, good.
Oh,
yes,
good.
Thanks. Sorry to have dropped.
Yeah. Hey, as you may have heard, we had a caller by the name of Tom, and Tom had worked for Coastal Management for a while, and he said the big advantage is that whether it was one statewide body or the districts, you were helping out, especially the small businesses, get through a lot of bureaucratic hurdles and avoid a lot of problems. Kurt agreed with that, but Tom went on to say that I just don't have any confidence that the legislature is going to do anything with this, and that's why I'm going to vote for Ballot Measure 2. And Kurt responded, I think the legislature will deal with it, and this is the wrong way to go. So now back to you, Beth.
Well, as the legislator, you know, on this program, and not to be, you know, overly legislative, no, we failed to pass a bill in last year's session. That's in 2011. We went into two special sessions and failed to get a bill. And last session, we introduced the initiative. We wanted to work this out in the legislature. I wanted to work it out in the legislature. And we introduced the bill. Representative Alan Osterman, Republican Majority Leader from Kodiak, who's strongly in support of the initiative, he introduced this initiative as legislation. We got one hearing and no public testimony. There was a bill that was introduced in the Senate, no hearings. This isn't going to happen in the legislature. That's why we have to act now. And, you know, I don't think this initiative needs fixed. I did not say that. I said there are things that will be filled in by regulation, timelines, things like that, that normally go through regulation so that everybody has a seat at the table to discuss exactly how they want it done. And there are direct sections in this initiative that make great changes. It doesn't go all the way back to the old Coastal Policy Board because, as their lawyer, you know, back in the day, I know the problems that happened there. It doesn't serve as an appeals board, for one thing, anymore.
Okay.
That is way, way too difficult. So it does make great changes. It has direct language. And, yeah, I'm sorry. I don't think the legislature will touch it if it goes down.
All right, Beth, thank you. We're getting in the underbrush here. Let me take the break here, and then I'll give you briefly back to you, Kurt, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. A PFD reminder, check the status of your 2012 PFD application with MyPFD info online at pfd.alaska.gov. You can view or change your voluntary deductions until Friday, August 31st. This message sponsored by the state of Alaska.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
It's Talk of Alaska, and Kurt Fredrickson, I want to let you rejoin on what Beth Kurtula said, which basically she said, hey, look, I was counsel, and I knew some problems, and they're fixed in this. This is better than the old system.
Yeah, and I want to get back just to the notion of whether the legislature is going to be involved in this or not. I'm quite confident it will. I don't think it'll be for 2 years. If the bill passes, but I'm confident that they're going to have to work on this either to put a good coastal management program in place. And I just want to quote from Representative Seaton in a recent Compass piece he had in the Anchorage Daily News. He said, if it's enacted, I'm certain that the legislature will amend the measure to ensure that the coastal program meets industry and Alaska needs. Now, he's certain if it passes, the legislature is going to take it up to fix the problems that I know exist in this ballot measure. Beth is certain the legislature won't deal with it if it goes down to defeat. I am confident the legislature is going to deal with this either way.
Let's go now to Kotzebue, where the mayor, I believe, Sikarik Whiting, joins us.
Uvla Lotuk. Good morning. This is Sikorik Whiting, mayor for the North Osatik Borough.
Uvla Lotuk.
Thank you for allowing me to speak on this very important issue.
Yes.
Thank you. As mayor of the North Osatik Borough, we've worked really closely with DNR on updating our coastal management plan for years. And we worked really hard to make recommendations that would benefit our residents. And it was very, very difficult to get our management plan supported, and it was very hard to have decisions made by one person who is the DNR commissioner. I think it's critically important to have a coastal policy board to allow us to be at the table when it comes to resource development in our backyard. When you look at the entire state of Alaska, most of the resources come from rural Alaska that supports the economy of the entire state and even the nation. And all we want to do is make sure that our voice is heard and to be at the table. There are so many times that decisions are not made, that decisions are made on our behalf without us having a say-so. So this is a really fantastic opportunity simply to give our voices back. And I do understand that it changes will be made on the existing wording, and it can be very confusing. But I am a strong supporter of this initiative, yes on two, simply to give our voice back to the people. And I think the Coastal Policy Board, representing all different parts of the state, are going to do a 2,000% better job than having the one DNR commissioner make decisions on our behalf. And it's critically important simply to give our voice back. We support resource development, have always supported responsible resource development, and will continue to support resource development. We just need to make sure that our people are at the table with what happens in our backyard. So the North Osatik Borough and the North Slope Borough just recently passed a joint resolution in strong support of Ballot Initiative 2. So I just want to encourage everybody to get out there and vote and simply to give us a voice in what happens in our backyard. It is absolutely the right thing to do.
All right. Thank you, Mayor Whiting. And, of course, one should note that you have the world's largest zinc mine right there in your backyard.
And the coastal zone management worked for us. It worked with us. And all we had to do was make sure that we are at the table. And it is a really good example for other resource development projects in the state of Alaska, simply to have coastal or local people at the table.
Okay, got a couple more calls I want to get in. Thank you very much, Mayor Whiting. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about Ballot Measure 2, and Joanne joins the program from Unalakleet.
Yeah, this is regarding a talk that we had a couple weeks ago. But one of the concerns that I have as a resident of Unalakleet, which is on the coast, on the Norton Sound in the Norton Sound area, is a very detailed and very specific evacuation program set for the villages in this region in the case of a huge coastal flood. I know that Barrow has a search and rescue program going on, but our region and many other regions in the coast need these programs in place.
Do you think the coastal zone management program would help you get there?
Well, it's related.
Okay.
And
I want to try and get
it is related.
Okay, Joanne.
I'm making this call in regards to a program, the talk show that you had
the Arctic.
A couple of weeks ago.
Right, and I want to thank you for your call, Joanne. But I want to try and get a couple more callers in. Thanks for bringing that up, and I don't think there is such a plan now in Unalakleet. So let's see if we can get Tom from Homer on. Tom, welcome to Talk of Alaska. You'll be the last caller.
Thank you for taking my call.
Right.
I'd just like to point out that the burning of fossil fuels and using nuclear energy is really a disaster waiting to happen. And that's covered in a book that's called Alcohol Can Be a Gas by David Bloom. And there are ways to make alcohol from the ocean and various methods from sewage lagoons and so forth that could be used
all across
the country.
Do you know how you're going to vote on Ballot Measure 2?
Yes, I'd vote for it because I think there needs to be control.
Control. All right. Well, we're pretty well out of time here, and I want to thank everybody for playing along. Sherry Land of Texas, thank you so much for being with us on the show.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. I enjoyed listening.
Yeah, we're having a lot of fun up here.
I know. Come visit.
Beth Gertula of the Alaska Sea Party, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
All right. And Kurt Fredrickson, it was great to
Thank you, Steve, and thanks, Beth and Sherry.
It was great to get your views and your insight on this, to get a long history with it, both of us. I hope we got a little bit more light than heat. And we'll be back again next week on Election Day with more Talk of Alaska. I want to thank Dave Waldron at the controls, Josh Edge on the phones. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Providence Imaging Center, providing diagnostic mammogram results to patients within one working day, led by Drs. Denise Farley and Heather Tauschik, provimaging.com. First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922, on the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.